This is the best of the best structure because their family is still wealthy to this day, so I follow the path that was already paved. You're not here to reinvent the wheel. What? I plan on living to 160.
So then you can at least have access to that money.
So what's the best business to have?
Consulting or management. One of the primary principles that you would have to teach your kids is teaching them the belief of it's possible. Usually the people who are closest to you are the ones who don't believe in you because they remember you when you were little and they're like, oh, why am I gonna listen to this little kid?
Hello, you guys. Welcome to the Shane So Podcast. Today, I have a very special guest. She's a master in wealth creation, Des Pena. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks Cheers. So much for having me, Shane.
Nice to have you here. Mine's lemonade, actually. What's yours?
I have some tea. On lemon tea, I think.
Lemon tea. All right. Well, Des, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
I'm grateful for you having me here.
Thanks All right. So tell us a little bit so the audience knows a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so I'll start with who I am and then what I do.
Oh, perfect.
So my name is Des Pena. I manage a $70 million estate, and I help six-figure plus business owners build generational wealth that actually lasts. And we do this through secrets of the ultra wealthy, which involve structures and policies.
Mm-hmm. Because there's not just one thing that the wealthy do. There's a whole bunch of things, and
it's
they all go together. Yeah,
absolutely.
So we're going to get into all of that, aren't we?
I mean, only a few. If you'd like us to, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so where I first met you was at Tai Lopez's party.
Yes.
So I've always done land trust and personal property trust, just basically to hold properties. And then I've heard from, you know, some other gurus and other multimillionaires that they do private trust and all these different types of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into you and you started talking. I was like, man, there's not that often that you find someone talking about it.
Yeah, so, once I started talking, I couldn't stop.
Okay, well, this is what I want you to do here. So tell us a little bit about what kind of trusts that you guys offer.
So when it comes to having a private trust, what we really need to understand is jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So a statutory trust versus a private trust. And statutory just means it's controlled by the state. So we have the United States of America, but the United States of America also has a corporation.
Hmm.
So we've actually separated the republic from the corporation. And they do that through the court systems and different systems that have been put in place where they're ultimately, the government is finally the people who are in control over your assets if you're putting it within their jurisdiction, which is statutory jurisdiction.
Okay.
When you operate privately, you make your own rules. And so that's what I like about the private trust because I can use trust law, I can use God's law, and you can actually use the Bible in court. It's actually like a book you can actually use to prove your case and get out of cases most of the time. That's called moving in equity.
Okay, so a statutory is basically almost similar to an LLC in a sense, but the private's
Correct.
Completely out of their jurisdiction, as you said.
Correct. So LLCs, all around, okay. corps, statutory trust are all under state control.
I didn't know that. Okay. And then the private one is anywhere in the world then?
The private trust is private, so no one actually holds your trust agreement. Mm-hmm. And the trust agreement that we actually use is completely copyrighted. So no one else has access to this particular private trust.
Mm-hmm.
You can typically have like a lawyer do it for you, but what they'll end up doing is including statutory laws throughout the private trust agreement, which nullifies it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't actually maintain its anonymity, avoiding probate, income tax, and capital gains tax.
So what are the things does the private trust do? I mean, tell us the point of them.
A private trust allows you to, one, create your own rules for the company. So I use this primarily for business. So I use all of my business and put that into the trust and operate from the trust as if it was an LLC. But it's under my control and the rules that I set out for myself. And what it helps with, the benefits are actually, one, you don't have to go through probate. So if I want to pass all of my assets and my business down to my heirs, I can do that without the courts getting involved because frankly, it's none of their business.
Yeah. So let's just say that, you know, I have it in a private trust. Okay.
Yes.
And I pass away. How does it go to the family?
So what the trust structure that we set up is a two-tier trust structure. So we have a primary trust on top that operates the business and then beneficiary trusts that are underneath it. And so you can pass through money from the primary business trust into the beneficiary trust. And that beneficiary trust can be, you know, the name of your kid or whoever it is. And as long as it's not going into their personal account, they won't be liable to pay for taxes on it, as long as it stays within the beneficiary trust. Okay. Now, remember, we want to own nothing and control everything.
That's right.
So they can be the beneficiary while you're alive. And then eventually you just want them to move into the position of trustee. So that way they can equally control all the assets if they know what they're doing. Because education, like I spoke about at the Atlanta Real Estate Conference, was, you know, by third generation, all the wealth is gone because they lack the education of actually maintaining wealth and keeping wealth throughout the family.
So whenever you say trust, is it kind of like just a bank account too, or does it go beyond that?
So trust is a trust agreement. Trust is making sure that your EIN is private. So we'll help you set up an EIN that's not actually tied to your social, helping you set up the bank accounts as well. Mm-hmm. We'll also give you a CPA that's certified by the IRS. So the firm will represent you if, for example, you ever get a federal audit. And they'll represent you for free as long as you're using our CPA.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, you had mentioned something about you don't have to pay any taxes out of a trust. How does that work?
No income tax.
No income tax.
Correct. So okay. No income tax and no capital gains tax. For example, you would still have to pay property taxes if you have real estate. Mm-hmm. And the way that works is when you're filing taxes for a trust, you're filing a 1041.
1041, okay.
Yeah, a 1041 form. And as long as it's filed correctly, the CPA does that. I don't, you know, I'm not filing my own tax forms, nor do I want to.
And we're not CPAs, are we?
Yeah, we're not. Okay. This is not financial advice. We're not CPAs.
Yeah.
This is simply tax tactics that the ultra wealthy use in order to maintain wealth within their family through generations.
Does it mean they don't have to pay taxes, period, or is it like deferred and just within the trust?
No, so it's not deferred. Basically, at the end of the 1040 exchange, from my understanding, you're just showing zero.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And does it do any type of asset protection abilities or anything?
Absolutely. So it's all of your assets are protected within a trust versus an LLC or a corporation. And you can do this. It depends on the structure. So I would actually have whoever it is who's interested in it sit down with the trust writer and explain what their exact situation is, because sometimes they may want to maintain the LLC and then just have the trust be the holding company of that LLC.
Okay.
But primarily what most people do is just put everything into the trust because it's a private trust. They don't have to be concerned about the extra legalities. They don't have to be concerned about getting sued. And it's just a way to maintain anonymity, so no one knows that
that's
you are the one who owns the trust. Yeah, because of the, do you know about the Corporate Transparency Act?
Oh, it's crazy, and they'll know everything.
Yeah, they want to know everything, and it's you're filing yourself with the financial enforcement, you know, with FinCEN. It's insane. The Criminal Investigation Unit, whatever it is, the acronym.
Yeah, what do you think about, like, they tried to do the BOI or whatever, and they got extended.
The beneficial ownership information form is basically FinCEN wants you to register yourself if you're the owner of an LLC or a corp, and this is because you made a statutory business by having an LLC with the state or having a corp with the state, the same way everyone teaches you to do it online. And when you do that, you are required, if you have a business, a January 1st, 2024, that was created, you had, I think it was only 60 days or 90 days to fill out the BOI form. And if you didn't do that, that's a $575 a day fine, one, every single day, and up to $10,000. Two, if you hired any immigrants, you would be liable to, you'd be put in jail for up to 2 years per each illegal immigrant that you hired.
Wow. I mean, do you think it was, now that they've suspended it again, do you think it was kind of a trick from the government to get people to come into, was it FinCEN you said?
FinCEN, yeah. The financial, we can look it up.
Yeah.
What's the acronym for FinCEN?
Hey, Mr. But Jason.
It was crazy. FinCEN acronym. But it's just a way for the government to infringe on your rights, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so too.
Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And that's a mix of like, the IRS, the SEC, the FTC, like everybody to be in your business when they have no business being in your business.
What percentage do you think actually did the...
lot of people. I think a lot of people did it. People who had businesses prior to January 1st, they have until December, the end of December of 2024 to complete it. But as of right now, it's currently on hold. And the Fifth Judicial Court in Texas, they fought it on hold. But this is not the first time that, you know, the government has tried to infringe on our rights as business owners. And then it's not going to be the last time. So I think this is just a way, me personally, and the my conspiracy theorist is that they're just trying to have you report yourself so that way they can keep a very close eye on what's happening with the money and then eventually just have like a one centralized one world bank.
I think so.
And then move everything to digital.
Yeah. So how often do you feel like, so whenever you're talking to people, how often do you get someone saying, hey, I know all about these trusts that you talk about? Or is it just completely rare? And it's kind of scary that people don't hear about, I feel.
Yeah, I think it's more rare than not because this is a tact that very few people know. So first off, you would have to take a look at the grand scheme of things. Like in the United States, I believe only 12% of individuals make over $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. If you're not making $100,000 a year or more, then you know, a trust, unless it's just for your primary residence, you don't really need like this big structure to keep everything safe because you really don't have, you know, much there to pass on. Mm-hmm. Now, people who are higher income earners, most of the time, they're stuck in their ways. They're like, oh, I know a guy or I have a friend and he does my taxes and he does this. I got this. Mm-hmm. But what they're not understanding is that if they were to go and actually study it and read their contracts and read their agreements, they would realize that they actually have no true ownership over anything that they own.
Oh, at all. So when you said high income earner, are you saying anyone 100 grand or more, or is there like 400 grand or more? Like, what's that?
Yeah, I would just say this structure, this beneficiary trust, like double trust structure, is beneficial for anyone who's paying $20,000 or more in taxes a year. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, what did the IRS ever do for you that you're paying them so much?
I don't know. They're just so sweet with us and take good care of us. You know? No, I just don't like it that they're just taking our money, they're just wasting it, in my opinion, don't you think?
I have no idea what they do with our money, to be honest, but
those $1,000 hammers,
they could just print it if they wanted it to, you know, if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. All right. So on other than trust, what else do you connect? So like we said, it's not just trust. There's more pieces to everything. What are some other things that connect with the trust?
So connecting with the trust, you want to fund your trust. A lot of ways that the wealthy, ultra wealthy fund their trust is through life insurance policies. Okay. Particularly, I like the ones that are early cash value. So meaning I can pull out my cash right away, because as a business owner, you don't want your money stuck somewhere where you can't access it for a year or a majority of it within, you know, 30 days, sometimes even 90 days, they'll push it out. So it took me 2 years to find the exact policy.
What's that policy?
Top secret, book a consultation.
Okay.
So it's a policy that, I started off with reading What Would the Rockefellers Do? Once I read that, I said, okay, this is what they do. This is the best of the best structure because their family is still wealthy to this day. So I follow the path that was already paved. Mm-hmm. You're not here to reinvent the wheel.
Yes.
You're here to simply protect the assets that you have and follow a path that already works. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know that through having mentors and being a mentor yourself for other people in real estate. Mm-hmm. So once I read that book, it took me about another year, like 6 months to a year, to find a company that has been in business for over 200 years. So then I found that. And then after looking through every single one of their policies and getting a bunch of quotes from all these different life insurance agencies, I finally came to one. Just one that does early cash value where you can pull your money out within 30 days and you have almost full access to it. So if I invested, for example, $25,000, I can pull out $21,000 in 30 days.
Wow.
And so you can use that. The beneficiary of that policy would be your trust. And that's how you would fund your trust and basically create your own bank.
Yeah. And it grows, doesn't it? Get paid like, or compound the dividends. Can you explain why it's good to put your money into a policy?
So policies, depending on the company, usually they'll invest into annuities or they'll invest into the stock market. On average, the company I work with typically returns between around 9%, between 6 and 9% a year. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there is no downside. So if their investments don't go well, you're not losing any of your money that you already put in.
It's the cash value. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. It maintains, you are only part of the upside of their investments. Mm-hmm. So if they make any investments, that's on them. That doesn't go through, that's on them, not on you. And your money is safe. And every single year, you know, this is compound interest. So over a long period of time, for example, my policy, in my lifetime, I'm only ever putting in 1.4 million mm-hmm. and my family is going to walk away with 35 million.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm still alive, I get to cash out with 35 million at 121 years old. Wow. I plan on living to 160.
So then you can at least have access to that money. That'd be good.
Absolutely. And you can continue to have access to that money as the policy grows, even if you've stopped investing into it.
So one other thing. So this is a question that maybe you can answer. On the trusts and the life insurance, doesn't bankruptcy, it doesn't affect either one? Am I right? Or does it only affect one or the other?
That's an interesting question. So because I started in the credit space, I don't even like bankruptcy. Like, I'd rather you just stay in collections and we can work on clearing those collections rather than mm-hmm. going into bankruptcy, because it takes sometimes over a year, like sometimes 6 to 9 months, sometimes 9 to 12 months, just to get a bankruptcy off the credit, because the way you have to dispute it is really difficult. Now, what those implications are for your assets, as long as you're not the primary beneficiary of those policies mm-hmm. and, you know, there's a proper private trust structure in place, you don't have to be concerned about those assets ever being tapped into.
Well, what about divorce? Let's just say, like, husband and wife, this guy has a ton of money in cash value and in the insurance policy.
Yeah.
And then he has his money in a trust. Like, how does that get, like, divided or done? Or is it protected?
As long as it's within a trust, mm-hmm. from my understanding, it won't be affected by... And honestly, how would that person even know? How would they know? They're never going to know.
That's true.
So as long as you're protected mm-hmm. in the best corporate structure possible, and in my opinion, that would be on the private side rather than the public side, then you don't have to be concerned about, you know, getting divorced and having all your money taken from you. And I think Shaq? Somebody got divorced and then dude was just smiling, like some celebrity. He was just smiling because he knew that everything he had was in a trust and he was going to walk away home free. So his wife divorced him and she literally walked away with nothing. So when you have your items in a trust, they cannot touch it because mm-hmm. it's trust law. It trumps, you know, the law that they're operating in, the jurisdiction that they're operating in within the court.
Okay. And excuse me if this is a dumb question. I've heard difference between irrevocable and revocable trust.
Yeah.
What type of trust is the private trust?
The private trust is an irrevocable trust.
Irrevocable trust.
Revocable okay. trust is when people can, you can go in and make changes, and that's when they start sticking their hands where they're not supposed to. Mm-hmm. So if you had a revocable trust, that could technically be pierced, you know, if you're going through a divorce or something like that.
Okay. Gotcha.
So irrevocable is definitely the way to go, but you mm-hmm. want to have it done correctly because you can't go back and make changes.
Okay. And do you guys have a ton of clients, I assume, that are in all these trusts and with the insurance?
So it depends. Some people start off, like a majority of my clients, mm-hmm. they're just like, hey, my credit is so messed up. Can we start here? Like step one. So they gradually get taken through a journey.
All the phases.
Yeah, well, through all the phases.
Let's talk about the credit then. Okay, so sure. Before we get into all of that, what got you into the business credit and into the trust and insurance policies?
So what got me mm-hmm. into the business credit was primarily just that I was working on people's personal credit. And after I fixed their credit, they were like, oh, can you help me get money? And I'm like, okay, we need to get you funding. They usually would already have a business, so they knew what to invest into afterward. Mm-hmm. And I would look at their corporate structure and even their LLC wasn't set up properly. For example, they don't have a business phone number. They don't have a business address. You think a bank wants to lend to somebody who's operating a business out of their home?
Yeah, they check those things.
Yeah, they're like, why do you need 100K? You're operating from home. But mm-hmm. if you have an actual business address and you're operating out of a commercial building, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, you know, you probably need some office equipment, some printers, more chairs. Mm-hmm. So you have to structure everything properly, even if you are operating from an LLC or a C corp. And then after I was helping people fix their structure to get funding, you're not going to get as much funding if you're just funding yourself personally mm-hmm. versus if you're doing personal and business at the same time. And when you do the applications, mm-hmm. sometimes they can do both with one inquiry.
That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah.
So when there, let's just say that I say, hey, look, here, I've got good credit. Mm-hmm. Here's a new LLC. I just started it last month. What would be like two or three first steps that I need to take in order to make sure I maximize my business credit or the chances of getting good funding?
So to maximize mm-hmm. your business credit, mm-hmm. you would definitely want to make sure that you have business phone number, business email, and business address.
Okay.
And then ideally, if you want some little extra steps, a little mm-hmm. sprinkle, sprinkle.
Yeah, I want some tips.
You get mm-hmm. the website set up and you have social medias on and open with at least 12 posts each platform mm-hmm. and file yourself with the 411 listing. So that way you're easily recognizable online.
401 listing?
411 listing.
411 listing. Okay. Yeah. I thought you said 401. Okay. Yeah. 411 makes sense. Okay.
Yes. So that way when you, mm-hmm. they look you up, you're searchable. Mm-hmm. And then after we got in through the funding and they have money, they came to me and they're like, Des, what do I do with the extra money? I only needed 50K. You got me 300. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, great. Now you came to me and I need to figure out what to help you do with your money that's actually safe. Gotcha. And so that's how I got into the policies. And then when the BOI came out, I was just freaking out. I'm like, I'm not about to register myself with the financial crime organization. I don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. So then it was a matter of just finding solutions. And I grew along the way as my clients needed more help. Because if someone comes to me and they're like, hey, Des, I need help, I can't just let them go. I'm like, let me figure out a way to get them to a solution. I'm a solutions person.
No, that's great. That's great. So you're giving value to people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So real quick too, going back to the funding thing. So if you're doing business credit, do you need to leave it on an EIN number? Or should they do like a DUNS number or like?
You set up an EIN number and a DUNS number, but you want to be careful because you guys, you're in real estate. I'm sure a lot of your audience is in real estate, but real estate is actually considered a high risk industry. Mm-hmm. So if you file your EIN or when you're opening up the LLC and your NAICS code is real estate, you're considered high risk and the banks will just be like, nah, if you're in credit, real estate, or if you're in, sometimes e-com can even be considered high risk.
So what's the best one to, what business to have?
Consulting or management.
Consulting or management.
That's like a safe bet.
Why would they give good funding to that if it's like, hey, I'm going just for office stuff?
Honestly,
assume they would have done it for like lawn care or something because they need like tractors or.
I would say that that's okay. But I'm just letting you know what's worked for me. And I only do what I find the one thing that works and I keep doing it over and over and over again. Yeah.
Okay. So your clients that came to you for funding, then they got a ton of money. Like, well, what do I do with it? Then what it is, you're putting it into insurance policies.
So I didn't want to be responsible for them losing their money. So I'm like, here's something that's safe.
Yes.
And then as I have more high profile clients, they get to be part of different private banking opportunities. Mm-hmm. So like trades that happen on the London Stock Exchange and like international business that they can grow their money at a faster rate if they have like 5 million to invest or more, sometimes 1 million for the small caps.
Okay. And then, so then it went from there to saying, hey, I need to protect myself, probate court, wealth,
like yes.
generational wealth. And also, I do realize that like trust and stuff, that helps make sure that the family that they're leaving the wealth to don't squander the wealth. Aren't there certain restrictions that you can put on it?
So you have to set that up yourself. Mm-hmm. So you set the rule book for your trust. So for example, in my family trust, it works as a bank. So you get to borrow the money from the trust. You're not just getting it. I didn't just get things. I worked for things. I'm sure you did too. Mm-hmm. So instead of utilizing the bank to get a loan, we're actually going to use the family trust as a bank. And instead of giving you a 6 or 7% interest rate that they have right now, we're going to give you a 2% interest rate. And on the auto loan, you could pay it back within 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so the financial burden isn't as heavy, but you're still giving back into the trust every single month. So that way it continues to grow. And then for example, my future kids or future grandkids, they are going to get like a $10,000 investment and it's going to be their job to 10x it and make it 10,000 into 100,000. And if they can't do that with that $10,000 they were given, then like you're not accessing the trust. Yeah. So you have to prove that you're able to be creative. And honestly, I'm putting them through my school course. Not that I have kids yet, they'll be put through a series of lessons that they'll need to learn before they can even access the money. Because if they don't know what to do with it, if they don't know how to multiply it, and it can be in whatever industry they want, but they just need to understand the concept of, this is what I have, how do I multiply it and make it more? Mm-hmm. And those are the primary principles that you have to teach. One of the primary principles that you would have to teach your kids, when really the primary most important thing is teaching them the belief of it's possible. Because so many people stop themselves when they don't have enough belief that they're able to accomplish something greater. And that's why only 12% of Americans make over 100K.
I agree. And we, you know, I used to own Taekwondo schools. Actually, we still have two of them. But we used to have this saying to the kids saying, we don't want you to have the I can't do it attitude. You have to have an I can do it attitude.
Yeah.
And then what I've also told my staff is say, well, I can't really afford it. You need to say, how can I afford it? Just correct. A little bit of things really change a lot in life.
So I don't use, I'm very careful with my language. Mm-hmm. So when you hear me
talking about hypnotism earlier, I thought that was pretty cool. So you want to be careful with your language for suggestions.
Yes, it's reprogramming your subconscious beliefs. So anytime you're, the same way you eat food and what you put into your body, what you eat is what you are, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the same way when it comes to consuming content, the people that you surround yourself with, and the words that you tell yourself on an everyday basis. So the way I broke out of being someone who was within a system, you know, going to Catholic school, getting straight A's, going to work, getting a job. The way I broke out of that primarily was reframing what my inner voice was telling myself. Mm-hmm. So I had to reframe my beliefs, which involved just speaking to myself more nicely and not complaining. So step one was never complain. And that was actually a culture shock because I had gone to Honduras to help build a school. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Honduras, I saw these kids, they were so happy and they had no shoes and sometimes no food. And they were just walking around super happy and they were still so generous. There was this little kid named Isaac that I read to. He primarily spoke Spanish. I primarily spoke English, even though I could speak a little bit of Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I read to him and he wanted to say thank you on my last day. I was there for a week and he's like, here, take all my pink silly bands. And I was like, how'd you buy the silly bands? And he goes, I bought it with my own money. And I was like, if I was 8 years old and I bought silly bands, I would not be giving any to anybody. I don't care if they're blue, pink, purple, they're mine. And so, because, you know, growing up in America and I'm the oldest, you know, like I did have to share and I didn't mind sharing because I love taking care of my little brothers. But just seeing how happy these kids were when they had nothing, I came back to the States and I was like, I don't deserve to be upset about anything and I don't deserve to complain. So I cut out complaining completely and that changed the inner voice that, you know, speaks to myself on a daily basis.
Yeah. Seeing kind of those things definitely changes your perspective. And one thing that you told us in the car on the way here is that you actually saw a homeless guy yesterday. I know you don't film it, and I know you're not bragging about it, so that's why I'm going to bring it up. But you said you saw a homeless guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't have any money or anything like that, and you made sure to buy him some food.
Yeah, he was actually going into the trash while I was, like, on the parking meter. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, excuse me, sir. And, of course, he's not used to being called sir, so he, like, didn't pay attention to me the first two times. Mm-hmm. But I invited him out to eat at a restaurant. I was like, hey, do you want to go get tacos? And he's like, sure. Taco spot was closed. So we went across the street and sat out front and he got like a French onion soup and like a spicy burger, whatever was open at that time. It was late. But and my friend had actually took a homeless guy out to eat in LA and then briefly like told me about it, I think maybe 2 weeks ago. And that just inspired me to do the same. So it was a butterfly effect. And then the friend that I was meeting that night that came like to the table where he was at, bought food for someone else. So I think it is important to share these stories.
Yeah. I know this is going to be kind of a weird comparison here, but you know, I think it's shows good character that you would help someone that is less fortunate. And then the fact that you went to Honduras and you were able to help less unfortunate people too. Because I also did Christian mission. I think it's good for everyone to see that. The other thing is I've seen people really discriminate against rich people, believe it or not. People think rich people are just all evil.
They give so much more than any other person in knowledge and time and value. Mm-hmm. And it's just because they can.
Yeah.
You know, when you build yourself up so much, so you don't make a lot of money if you haven't developed yourself first.
That's right.
And that comes from a good mindset. That comes from having good values. And I'm not saying everyone has good values and everyone who makes money has good values, but you can tell.
Yeah.
You can feel a difference in the person. And, you know, we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you get to create the life that you want for yourself. And the first way to start that is by changing how you speak to yourself and therefore how you speak to others. So I don't let people, when I'm talking about a policy and when I move on to the afterlife, I say transcend. I don't say DIE. I don't say, I don't use the opposite of the word love.
Mm-hmm.
And my little brother makes fun of me. He goes, what do you mean? I can't say hati? I can't say hati? I'm like, no, you can't say that because we don't hati anything. We can highly dislike, but we want to stay away from those negative language and thought patterns because of the, honestly, it comes down to science. Have you heard of the Dr. Masaru Emoto water experiment?
What is that?
So this was a Japanese doctor who decided to study the effects of water, the effects of language and music on water. So he started speaking to like this water with his other students and was saying positive words. It was gratitude, words of gratitude, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. Another one saying, I love you, I love you, I love you.
To the water?
To the water. Hmm. And then freezing it. And then after freezing it, they would pull it out and then look at it under a microscope and would see the crystallization structure of the water.
Hmm.
And it was absolutely beautiful. It turned into pretty little snowflakes, the ones that he spoke gratitude to, the ones that he said, love, I love you to, and then the ones that they'd use negative language towards, it turned like murky, like it turned black. The water turned black and it had no form to it. When the other ones were snowflakes. And your body is made up of over 70% water. Honestly, I think it's like 90 plus.
Yeah.
So that's why I make sure that I'm very careful because through osmosis, you know, you have to protect your energy. And I think that's a very big part as to why I try not to speak anything negative out into the universe because it'll simply reflect it back to you.
So you're being, your reality. You're being kind to others and yourself.
Absolutely.
That's important. It's healthy.
I mean, and that's the only way I feel like, I think that's one of the best ways to be able to create a future generation. Like, honestly, meeting your family at the event, like, they're all incredible. It's insane. Everybody is super loving, super attentive, very caring. And you can feel that everyone's happy to be there. Like, they enjoy their time with you. And so, one, to be able to create that movement, Shane, that's amazing in itself. Because to get that many people, especially who are close to you, usually the people who are closest to you are the ones who don't believe in you. Because they remember you when you were little. And they're like, oh, why am I going to listen to this little kid? And he's like 20 years younger than me, you know? Like, So, and a lot of people who have reached a higher level of success usually face those challenges. So you tend to make your money with different entrepreneurs and other people that are outside of your family unit. But for you to be able to bring everyone along with you is absolutely incredible. And I hope to do that one day myself.
Oh, I appreciate the compliment. And like I said, growing up, I realized how bad it is to have negative people in your life.
Yeah.
So we've been very strict with the speakers that we had come and to the people that we actually even invited, you know.
Oh.
And we had some amazing, it wasn't just the speakers and my family. We had some amazing attendees that came. The way the questions they asked and how positive they were was just amazing. And the speakers, you know, some of the conferences, I don't know about you, but usually the speakers, they kind of hide out and don't let in, you know, don't go see anyone.
I was hiding.
These guys, you guys were all out there.
Yeah, I went out at certain points because I'm an ambivert. I'm not, I know you said you're an introvert.
I am.
I definitely need to like recharge to make sure that I can bring like positive energy to any, you know, any podcast that I go on, any speaking engagement. And then even when someone sees me, I want that same energy that I had up on stage to be right in front of them live.
Well, you did amazing. And that was your first time speaking is what you told me, by the way, which I think you did an amazing job. I couldn't tell.
Thank you.
You told me right before you went, I said, it's my first time. I'm going out there. I was like, no.
Oh, I told you on the way off.
On the way off. I'm sorry. Yeah. When you, I said, no, wait a minute. You did great. So how was your first experience speaking?
It was absolutely incredible. So this was my first time speaking one to many on a stage. Besides like on a panel, I was on panels before and, you know, a very few podcasts, but this time it was definitely different because we had over 300 plus attendees. I think over 350 attendees, right?
Yeah, 325. We almost made
325. Yeah. Right? That's still an incredible turnout. Thank you. On top of that, these are individuals who are seeking more for themselves. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, most people aren't doing it for themselves. They're doing it for someone else or for their future family or for their current family or for their immigrant parents. You have to understand what your why is. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the people that really inspire me because they're not lacking anything to reach a higher level of success besides the knowledge and belief. And when you have those two things, everything turns out for you in the exact way it's supposed to.
Absolutely. So you're going to come back out and speak with us again?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. Other than business, what do you do for fun? What's some hobbies? What's your favorite food?
I'm a nerd. I like business. I like finance. I like finding hacks to create my own system because if I don't create a plan or system for myself, I'll fall into the plan or system of someone else. And it's not necessarily someone else. It's just whatever the largest system is. Like, for example, I was speaking to you about, you know, United States of America as a corporation. So they set up the system of go to school. You're there from 7 a.m. to like 3 p.m. You're waking up at the crack of dawn. The way I would like to educate my kids is my future kids is actually through putting them on the private jet. And we're going to Fiji to go scuba diving to learn about marine biology and coral reefs. Like that's the kind of learning I want to do.
I think that'd be good.
And it's creating a different experience because then it puts them in a creative state. Mm-hmm. In order to, because we're here for creation. Like we're not here pretty much to do anything else. Like animals, they procreate. Us as human beings, we get to create businesses, skyscrapers, which I know you're working on right now. And it's just such an incredible way to formulate the exact reality that you want for yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you have a system that you have fallen into and you're stuck within that system, meaning that, okay, now you went to high school and now you go to college. Now you go to a 9-to-5 job. Literally, it becomes so mundane that people become unhappy with their lives if they're not following their purpose. Like, for example, my mom's a social worker. She loves her 9-to-5 because she's helping people. Mm-hmm. But there's other people who wake up and dread waking up that day because they're going to come back home tired and have no time for what really matters to them, which is usually their family.
100%. So in 5 years from now, where do you see yourself?
I showed you my vision board in the car.
Yeah, you did.
So
Yeah, you showed me all these places that you're going to have and everything.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. So in about 5 years' time, I will have a minimum of at least 5 personal properties, most likely also some commercial ones for business-wise, but personally 5 properties. Mm-hmm. And then I would also like to ideally be married with my first kid. That'd be cool.
That's good. Yeah, so you're not all business. You're family, too.
I do this for my family. Like, my little brothers and my grandparents are my life. Mm-hmm. And I've worked my entire life, as I said on the talk, for kids that weren't even here yet. Mm-hmm. And they're still not here. So I'm continuously working because when they do get here, I want to be able to spend as much time as I can with them. Because you only get so much time.
So much time.
Yeah. The minute they're teenagers and they go to high school, they're like, ugh, get away from me, mom.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's important. And right now I spend a lot of time with my grandparents because, you know, they're aging. I don't know how long they're going to be here for. I tell them forever. If they listen to me, they'll be here forever. If they don't listen to me and do their own thing, because I biohack.
Biohack?
Yeah. That's one of my interests. So part of my biohacking regime is I use red light both on my phone and devices and in my room after sun goes down. And then when sun goes up, the red light will turn off. Then I sleep in completely pitch black dark and
sleep
always keep
so
the
important room
a little cold. It is. Mm-hmm. And I don't use an alarm to wake up. I don't like it.
So what time do you wake up every day?
Usually around 9 a.m. or 8:30. Like my body naturally wakes itself up. Mm. So, and it's a luxury, you know, compared to when you would have to go to school or go to work and like the alarm's blasting at you. It puts you in a heightened cortisol state. And of course your cortisol is naturally heightened in order for you to wake up in general. But being able to create an environment that feels most not comfortable, because you do want to stress your body out sometimes. So I'll do cold showers or go into a sauna. So you do extreme hot and cold temperatures and interchange between the two. And what else do I do? I take a lot of supplements, not too many, but like NMN, which is the precursor to NAD+, colostrum for the gut microbiome, I do Shilajit and sea moss, and basically I supplement all the minerals that my body needs.
I'm gonna have to get you to make a list for me so I can see those things.
Yeah, that'd I'll be just good. Send you
I need
pictures.
To start taking more supplements and stuff.
Well, my goal is to live to 160 plus, so that's one of my missions.
I'd be good with 150. You have 160, I'll take 150 then.
I mean, you want to put the plus. You're not stopping plus. Yourself there. You know?
I like to have, I'm goal-oriented. I like a good even number. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so, all right. So funding, trust, insurance, anything else there are in these subcategories? I just want to
credit
make sure
restoration.
The audience. Oh, credit restoration. Yeah,
so that's where primarily people start. Their credit's messed up, or they don't really have a built credit profile.
What's the hardest credit to fix? Is it the bankruptcy, or is there something else?
That's everything's equally hard besides inquiries, but what takes the longest time is the bankruptcies.
Okay.
Yes. It's the
hardest
time wise.
How do you fix a bank? Like, how do they do this stuff? Like,
so the fastest way to fix a bankruptcy is one, you dispute the personal information first. So if there's any incorrect addresses, then you dispute the accounts. Then only after all the accounts have been removed, then you can dispute the bankruptcy. But the bankruptcy can never be removed from the court system. It's simply removed off of your credit report.
Okay. And how about something like late payments?
Late payments are such a pain. Yes, I think that's the most pain.
Okay, yeah, because I've heard every time I'm talking to a credit person, they're like, oh, do not pay the payment if it goes to collection and all that stuff. So kind of explain all the late payments, collections, all of that stuff.
So I have a lady, and it's so irritating because I'm supposed to be funding her now, and she has a beautiful credit profile, a couple of credit cards, you know, 20K limits, and she got an Amex card and paid it late last month. It dropped her score. I posted it on my story the other day too. Dropped her score from 775. That's what Equifax is. TransUnion and Experian dropped to 675. So that 130 day late payment dropped her a little over 100 points. I think it was like 102 points. Yeah, it doesn't matter what card it is. Just any late payment on any credit card, you're done. You're done, and then you have to start over, and it delays the process of you being able to reach your financial goals. So I recommend never paying a payment late on a credit card or a loan or a mortgage, nothing. Just pay on time.
So how long does it take to usually generally get those taken off?
It depends on the lender. Capital One, if you dispute with them on a late payment, they'll be like, okay, cool, you want to dispute that late payment? We're closing your account. Yeah, they're really tough.
Wow.
And so,
but that'll hurt your credit too if you lose an account, won't it? Or
yes, yeah. But if you're losing it because it had a bunch of late payments on it, you're better off losing it and removing it rather than keeping it on there. So if there's a closed account that has a late payment, I'll just remove the entire account because I don't want it on there because it's negatively affecting you, even if you don't know it.
Yeah,
it is.
So is there any specific thing that you could teach people to take off those payments, or is it better just to talk with professionals like you guys?
You can utilize UCC codes. So 1666B is primarily used for late payments, but it's really a matter of tenacity. So I'm someone who never gives up, because if you never give up, you don't fail. So I've never failed.
Because you have to keep doing it, don't you, or something.
You have to keep going. So the more you keep, you know, keep at it, you know, it'll eventually do what you want it to do, but you need to also be willing to continue to learn to see what new laws or what new avenues you can utilize to help get you the result that you want. And that's with everything in life, not just credit.
And what do you recommend to those people that just, they treat it as a game? All they want is they try to get the highest credit, high credit limit, but they never use any of the capital. Is that kind of a waste?
What are you using? Point? Yeah. What do you want a high score for? Like, if you just want it for a number on a report card, like, that's not giving you anything. But if you're utilizing it to build a $100 million real estate portfolio, then it's actually worth something.
Exactly.
So you want to make sure that you utilize all the assets that you have. Like, if you lack the knowledge, but you have the credit, that means you have the money to invest into hiring a mentor to get you closer to where you want to be, and no matter what avenue of business that is.
That's fine. And what is the worst credit you've ever seen?
400s.
It goes down in the 400s?
Yeah.
But we'll go without telling their name, of course, but like, what was on there that made
them? I don't remember their name.
What was it, like a bankruptcy and like 10,000 late payments? Or
actually, this person didn't have a bankruptcy. It was just a bunch of negative accounts. And by negative accounts, I mean collections, a bunch of repeated late payments, mm-hmm. a repossession. So that kind of stuff on the credit report. And a majority of time, this isn't simply because sometimes it's because they're bad money managers, but other times it's because they're business owners who didn't understand that you're supposed to have business credit separate from personal credit.
Yeah.
And then they over leverage their personal credit, not knowing that if you would have just kept your personal credit clean and good, you could have funded your LLC, utilized the business to fund any projects that you wanted to do, and then simply open up another LLC mm-hmm. and get 0% interest for 12 months and then basically balance transfer to the other LLC rather than putting it all on your personal. Because the minute your personal is locked, you're locked until everything is cleaned on and that entire personal report. Yeah. And when you mess up business credit, you can't fix business credit as far as I know. So I can't go in there and dispute things the same way I can with a personal.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So what, but okay, tell me this, is like credit score goes all the way up to 850, right? Personal?
Yes.
What is it with business? Isn't it a little different metric or scale?
So it depends on what you're working with. When you're working mm-hmm. with a personal credit profile, it's mm-hmm. TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. Mm-hmm. When you have a business, they have Equifax, Business Experian, SBS or SBA, and then Dun & Bradstreet. Okay. So they have just different names for their credit agencies.
Okay, but isn't the scale different? It's not like,
and the numbers are, yeah, the numbers are different. I think it goes up to 100, mm-hmm. but primarily if you're at 85 or above, you're in a good place.
Can you get to the point where you could help people get non-recourse loans or no personal guarantee loans or credit cards? Or is that usually a corporate structure?
Only if they have income coming into the business.
Okay.
And then usually those rates will be a lot higher, mm-hmm. but it depends on if we're talking about that, if it's a deal like under $1 million, but mm-hmm. if you're talking about a deal that's like $2 million or plus, you usually need to have collateral, back it up. Yeah. It could be business collateral or personal collateral if you want, but if the business owns assets, then you can utilize that to securitize the loan.
Okay. So let's just theoretically talk. So I have a buddy over here, Tanner. He does heavy Amazon stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Heavy Amazon stuff. And he comes and says, hey, Des, I want like $10 million in credit lines. How realistic is that? And let's just say he's got a few credit cards. You know, he doesn't have anything bad. He's like 780 credit score.
What are the limits on his
Let's just say it's a $100,000 and a $50,000 and a $200,000 credit limit. This is pretty good.
Is that a personal side or on the business side?
Only on personal, no business. Okay. What would he need to do specifically to build up on the business side?
So the way that the credit works, and I mean, he wouldn't need to add any trade lines because he has a built personal credit profile. I would always start off PG.
Can you explain what a trade line is for those that don't know?
Yes. A trade line is simply any account that is reporting on your credit report. So that could be a credit card, that could be a loan, that could be a mortgage. And sometimes what you can do is add trade lines. Primarily, you're not the primary mm-hmm. owner of it. So they're called authorized user accounts, mm-hmm. where, for example, Shane, you have a credit card. Mm-hmm. And then Tanner says, hey, Shane, I know you have an 80K credit card. Can you add me on as an authorized user for your card? Okay. You would simply call the credit card company and say, hey, I want to add an authorized user. And then within 30 to 60 days, it'll report on Tanner's credit report. However, if your utilization is high or if you just opened up the card, that can tank their credit scores.
Okay. Yeah.
And it'll affect both of you.
Is it really important in the business credit that they have like net 30s and net 90s, net 60s? Or is that just kind of like, good, but not really?
You don't really need it, especially with a new LLC. I'd rather save people money than like be like, buy this because you need to. Like, you really don't need to get your net 30s or net 60s.
Talk about that, right? They're like, you got
to
do
most of the time. Yeah. It just helps to establish. So, mm-hmm. the same way I was talking about making sure you have the business address, the mm-hmm. phone number, it helps you establish credit for the business, but you can get credit for a business over 100K without any of that.
Okay. So, so that'd be phase one. What's after that? What would Tanner need to do to say, hey, look, his goal is 10 million in business credit?
So, you would have to build up to that. He would, it depends on how much capital he has stashed away, but you're looking at, okay, so you have to understand a few things. So one, they're only going to match you a little bit higher than what you have on your personal side. So if you have your highest credit limit is 100K, they may give him for the business 150 or 200 max. Mm-hmm. They're not really going to push it past that. And it's also dependent on what the bank has to give you. Because if they don't have that many deposits or if they don't have that many assets, and you can look this up on ibank.net, okay, what the banks or credit unions are actually investing into. So if they're not investing into giving people personal credit cards or business credit cards, they're just not going to give you the money. If their primary investment is, hey, we want to solely focus on commercial real estate, which a lot of them like to do, mm-hmm, those are the people who they're going to be giving their money to. It's just a matter of what the banks deem as a safe investment.
Okay, gotcha.
And so when you have a good credit score, which is why you would want to PG, you'll get better rates. And then they'll also be, they understand that you're a safe person to lend to. Like, you wouldn't want to lend to me if I haven't paid back my last five lenders that I borrowed money from.
Why not?
You know? Yeah. So the banks, you have to think as if you were the bank.
Okay.
When you're preparing your credit profile.
All right. And then...
So he'd build that up over a couple of years. So for example, he'd have a $200,000 credit limit, utilize that. And one way to raise your credit limit is utilizing all of it. So if it was 200K, use the full 200K within 30 days and then pay it all down before the payment due date. And then that can slowly, incrementally increase it. Mm-hmm. And you call the credit card companies as well every, sometimes it could be 3 months, sometimes it could be 6 months, mm-hmm, and then ask them for a credit limit increase. But it would just be a matter of what he has on his personal credit, and then the business will match it. And so if he eventually gets to a point where he has an $800,000 credit card on his personal side, they'll go ahead and give it to the business. But primarily those credit limits or credit lines are usually collateral based through assets. So you'd have to put up a house or something like that, like a mortgage.
Okay, no, that makes sense. So do you do anything with points and travel hack and or something?
Yeah, I took a 9-day European trip.
All right, explain that. How did you do that?
So I had a bunch of points primarily from my American Express Platinum card, mm-hmm, and I had multiple LLCs, so I got to use the points from all of them. I consolidated it onto one card or transferred all of the points, depending on how I decided to do it. But you'll end up you'll get more bang for your buck transferring the points out of the initial platform, so outside of the Amex platform and into the airline you want to buy tickets from or into the hotel platform that you want to purchase from. And the way you would ask them, like, hey, how do you, you're probably asking like, hey, how do I even do that? You just call up the credit card company and say, hey, I want to transfer my points to one of your partners. I see one of your partners are American Airlines. How do I make this into Aero points? And then you'll call them and they'll say, okay, you just transfer it like this. So you'll need an account on American Airlines and an account, obviously, with Amex to get your points. Chase was also a really good one. Chase Sapphire, or Chase Business Inc. credit card. That one gives you a lot of points as well, which you can transfer to book hotels. So I think the Amex points I used for flights, and then the Chase points I used for hotels. And then I had a Navy Federal card as well. And that one I utilized for points for a 5-star gourmet hotel in Rome.
Oh, wow.
And my hotel room came with chocolate-covered strawberries.
So we all need to start doing this, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
I think credit cards and travel hacking and using points is actually pretty good. Now, here's the question. I know we're not CPAs. Do you have to pay taxes on the points?
No.
Why is that?
Because the IRS never sent me a letter saying I had to.
Well, I think it's because it's a rebate, right?
I'm not 100% sure. I just find what works and what works works. And I'm like, I let my CPA figure out the rest of it.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Listen, we're not CPA, so we're just trying to over here guess that for sure. I haven't gotten a letter either. So, okay. All right.
I mean, maybe if you do like the cash, like the cash out or something like that, but you can utilize it as long as you're not utilizing it as income or you're not reporting it as income, because then it's not considered income and it's non-taxable. But
that's
like,
right.
I don't even have to worry about paying taxes in the first place. So it's not any of my concern.
That's true. Yeah. Can your trust, and it has an EIN number too, right? Can it get business financing as well? Or is that probably not what you want?
As long as it has an EIN number, yeah, you can.
Okay. Do you recommend people doing that or keeping that completely separate from your trust?
No, absolutely.
Okay.
Get credit on whatever entity you have. And the sooner you do it, the better. Because then you'll be able to leverage that into better opportunities when they come along.
Okay. And so can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Yes. So online, you can find me on Instagram at Despena, D-E-Z-P-E-N-A. That's also going to be the same thing on YouTube, which I'm going to be starting shortly. Thanks for inspiring me, Shane. And TikTok is Trillionaire Woman. I also have a website, thetrillionairewoman.com.
Yeah. And one thing that I thought was pretty neat, because we were always asking, because we know who Dan Pena is.
Yeah.
My dad. What is he called?
The Trillion Dollar Man.
The Trillion Dollar Man. And he's what?
My dad.
Yeah. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Hopefully he'll see this video and be like, I have a long lost daughter I didn't know about.
Which one was she? Okay. All right. Well, hey, I just want to say thank you for being on here.
Thanks for having me, Shane.
And I think that everyone should definitely book a consult with you, because, you know, trust, credit repair, you do business funding. Yeah. Is there anything? I mean, I feel like you just know a little bit about everything.
I like health. I'll talk health. Your ear off. If a client comes to me and we're talking about credit, mm-hmm. and I get them all set up with credit and they're like, yeah, I've been really sick and something's been happening. I'm like, don't worry. Let me look this up really quick and I'll find solutions. So I'm just a solutions oriented person. So if someone comes to me with a problem, if I don't know the answer, I'll find the right person who has the answer and, you know, connect them. So
they can contact you about really anything. They want to talk about food.
Ideally finance.
All right. Well, Des, thank you so much for being
on.
I appreciate you guys.
Make
sure to check her out, schedule a consult, and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Oh, there you go. Cheers.